Okay, the question was asked of me, by what authority do I say the things that I say? You know, that's kind of a tough question to answer. What do you mean by what authority? What is inherent in a question like that is that that there has to be some sort of institution behind me in order for anything that I say to have validity. Now, imagine if the devil heard a statement like that. What do you think the first thing that would pop into his head would be, right? Oh, well, you control the institution, then nobody can fight the institution because you say that the institution is where all of this power and control is consolidated. How do you know that the whole point of there being a church body in the first place isn't just a trap for the devil, a cage of every unclean bird? In other words, they come in to the church as a sanctuary. They're at first they're kicked out of the institution of Judaism, and that house is swept clean. And they go through dry and waterless places, and then they say, I'm going to go back to my old home, and I'm going to try and reestablish a new form of Judaism. All right, it's going to be based on a canon, just like the old Judaism, and it's going to be based on the Pharisaic canon, by the way, which we know how much God loved the Pharisees. But anyway, be that as it may, we're going to recast it in the image of the old church. And so basically, what was done away with is reinstituted, because the institution worked quite well the first time around in blinding the Jews and turning them against Jesus. So hey, why not just go with what works? You know, Satan is involved in every institution, I think, in the world. You know, I don't think there's anything where he doesn't see some kind of advantage, some kind of gain, some kind of power, some kind of control. You know, he will try to take it over. He wants to control the media outlets. He wants to control corporations. He wants to control institutions. He wants to control governments. And effectively he does, because the whole world is a business. And all of these things are basically business decisions. Now, I'm not going to try to impugn any particular church, all right? Because that's not what I'm about. The one thing that the elect exist for. Let me tell you what the elect exist for. What is the purpose of the elect to come at the end of time? The reason I know what the function of the elect is. In fact, I can tell you the future based on my understanding. Let me tell you what's going to happen. First of all, what's going to happen is patterned after what has happened. Okay? So if you know the players, for example, Peter is the church, John represents the elect who are to come at the end of time and to reveal mysteries to people at the end of time. All right? But what is the relationship between Peter and John? There is a tension between Peter and John. John has got his head on Jesus' heart. I mean, just all the time. And there's a point at which when the question is asked who it is that's going to betray Jesus, right? Peter sort of cynically asked John, why don't you ask Jesus, right? I guess because Peter presumably knew that Jesus would tell John, you know? But the point is, when you look at Peter and John together, and what they do together in the New Testament, right? All of those interactions are instructions. For example, when they are brought news that Jesus is no longer in the grave, who is it that runs to the grave? It's Peter and John, right? And what does it say? It says the disciple whom Jesus loved, that is John, right? The one who has his head on his heart all the time, right? Well, if he ran to the tomb and beat Peter to it. But guess what? He didn't go in. He stopped. All right? And he allowed Peter to go in before him. He was deferent to Peter. And this is what we are instructed to do. It's like this. It's like deja vu all over again. We exist to help the church, to transition, to be converted. There is a conversion for the church. Jesus says to Peter, when thou art converted, thou art to strengthen thy brethren. Right? Well, the church has all this power and influence and resources. They got all kinds of TV, radio, newspapers, magazines. They've got all kinds of presence in the world. Now, the problem that we see in the Bible, in the scriptures, is that John, while being deferent to Peter, and for all we can tell, is respectful towards Peter, we find that Peter doesn't have such a wholesome attitude towards John. We find that, for example, when Peter is chastised. See, okay, Peter is meaning the church, Jesus is being the Logos, okay? Just get the picture here. If Jesus says, I am the Logos, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the light, okay? So, for example, when Jesus walking across the Sea of Galilee, Jesus being the Logos or whatever, and then this journey across the sea represents this age. He sends them on ahead of him, right? And he kind of dismisses the multitude. And he goes up to a mountain to pray. And a little bit later on, he goes walking across the sea while they're 2.5 or 3. So it's right on the cusp between the second and the third day, in other words. They're like between 25 and 30 furlongs, I guess, off or whatever. And then he greets them in the boat as he's crossing across the sea, or this age. The age being, of course, the nations and the peoples and the tongues and the kings and whatever, as it mentions in Revelation. It's just a given cue. And so he's crossing this age with them on foot, and they think that he is a ghost. And so then he calls Peter out to him. He's like, if you're really Jesus, then call me out to you, right? And he's like, come on, right? So he gets out there and he starts walking across the sea towards Jesus. And as long as he has his eyes on the Logos, right, then he is immune to the winds and the waves. And remember, the winds, right, do not be blown around by every wind of doctrine. They have to do with doctrines. Winds are doctrines. And the waves, right? You know that he that is unstable is like a wave, or like wavereth like a wave of the sea or whatever. They're unstable, right? Or as in Jude puts it, these men, meaning the infiltrators of the church, are wild waves of the sea foaming up their own shame. So as soon as the doctrines and these infiltrators of the church start coming in, and Peter takes his eyes off of Jesus, or the church, in other words, takes his eyes off of the Logos, in other words, to pay attention to these doctrines, these winds, and these infiltrators, these waves, right, that have infiltrated the church, then he starts to sink into the world, right? And so therein lies the need for the institutions, all right? Because institutions are inherently worldly, they are inherently fleshly, all right? And as soon as he sinks into the water, right, in other words, he's totally mired in worldliness, right, then he cries out to the Logos to save him. And then the Logos reaches out and saves him. Okay, this is exactly what is going on. The Word is trying to save you, but you don't want to be saved. You don't yet want to be saved. Peter has sort of this dislike of John that John does not have. John is very deferent and respectful all throughout Acts when they act together and they heal together, right? John is always deferent. He's always got his eyes on Peter. He's always letting Peter speak. He's always letting Peter, but you know, that is after Peter's conversion, because again, by that time he had already denied Jesus 3 times, right? By the time the book of Acts times rolls around, okay, so he's already denied Jesus 3 times, all right? The Logos, in other words, Peter's looking at, for example, Jude, and Jude is quoting Enoch, and Peter, the church, is saying, nope. Not having any part of that. I am denying that part of the Logos. And all of you people, by agreeing to disagree with Jude, have in a sense conspired to deny the Logos. Because the Logos says one thing and you deny it. And you can't see that, you don't get that, because we know that Peter denies him a 3rd time, right at the second crow. It says, right as the cock was crowing, he denied him the 3rd time. So now all this that I've been talking about how when you can look at Paul quoting the wisdom of Solomon and still deny it. How you can look at Jude quoting the book of Enoch and still deny it. Well, you see, if God has inspired these prophets and God has inspired his word, if Jesus is in fact the Logos, the understanding of the word, right? Then when you deny his word, you are denying the Logos. All right? This is what Peter does. This is what the church does. It's just a demonstrable fact that the church has denied the book of Enoch, even though Jude has affirmed it. The Protestant church has denied the wisdom of Solomon, even though Paul has affirmed it. All right? There are tons and tons of references to apocryphal books throughout the Old and the New Testaments, and the church again and again and again denies the word. So this is a straight up, you know, picture of the church and the way in which it treats Jesus. And at the second cockcrow, at the 2,000 year mark, guess what? The church is going to deny again, just like you want it to.